Order. Let the record show that all board members except for Mr. Crawford are present. Board members, if you would take a look and audience at our agenda, I would like to bring or point out your attention on page one. If you'll notice down underneath the presentation, we have a little box that says 4:30 p.m. open session, conference room one. Right underneath that, we should have another box that says closed session, conference room one. So just a change in the little wording that we have there. So after the open session, and it has been brought to our attention that there may be some folks who would like to speak to us before we move into closed session. So we would do that right here after our presentation. So one small change in the agenda. Open session, our first item is a board study session. PBK Architects propose building plans for the potential K-8 Arboga School expansion. Welcome.
Thank you. Let us pull this up.
This
one? No, the one I have.
Sorry about that.
So if I might, if I could interrupt you just for a moment, for the record, I would like to show that all board members are present at 2:32. Thank you.
What do you hit to advance? Oh, that one, those. Got it.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us here. My name's Gary Geary, principal with PBK Architects in Sacramento. I've brought along today Kim Johnson, this senior project manager and associate on the project, and Zoe Bick, also as a job captain working on this project. So what we wanted to do, we've been working on this project for a little while, and we have come to a point we call kind of the end of our concept design stage and wanted to do a presentation. We put together a book at the end of this and, you know, that shows the whole process and what we've come to in the design. And so we're here today to just kind of walk you through that, show you what we've come up with, and then answer any questions you might have today. So with that, so this is for the conversion of our Arboga school to a TK-8 school. So it's just, you've all got a copy of the book, so I'm just going to walk through the book as you have it. So obviously the first page is acknowledgments of the team. And then the next page is showing us the table of contents. And we have pictures scattered about. So we're going to start with where we began with this process, which was an existing site analysis. So we went out on a couple different occasions, walked the site, met with the principal, met with Travis, and kind of looked at what's there now, kind of looked at the spaces, looked at the playground areas, looked at the roadway, the traffic, the parking flow. And so as you see, Arboga is kind of located in the south end of the district. There's new development around there that has been feeding to the school and to Yuba Gardens up on the north side.
So Mr. Geary, excuse me, could I just ask, when throughout the presentation, would you like us to wait to ask questions at the end of the presentation or as you go through each of the slides, or what would be your your preference.
Feel free to ask questions at any point in the presentation. I may say we're going to get to that one, and then we can kind of move to it. But, no, feel free at any time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't like sitting up here talking for a long period of time without people, you know, interacting with me. Makes me nervous. So one of the things we did, too, when you look at the site, and you can see it's outlined in red, is that we've got prevailing wind directions that we look at the site. We look at the direction of the sun angles at the different times of year. Those things are kind of important for, you know, where you place buildings, trying to, you know, optimize the, you know, sun exposures on the building, as well as, you know, the wind placements. So it just kind of gives us a basic, and then we're looking at the surrounding areas so that we know what's around the neighborhood, which in this case is predominantly what we would call kind of rural residential agriculture in nature. A few houses kind of clustered together, but then, you know, large parcels of more ag-based type of space. So this is a map that shows the current campus as it exists. So you can see there's a small parking lot in the front of the campus. Right now, the buses are coming in where it shows number one on the map. And that's really nothing more than kind of a gravel type of area. It's not paved. It's not finished. Thus, it's not actually ADA compliant. Then there's all the green field space. You've got the main classroom building up front near the parking lot. And then a series of the portables being used as classrooms in kind of a U-shape off to the east side. And then the preschool building in the very northeast corner.
So, Mr. Gary, if I may.
Yeah.
So number 12, where it has the white that goes into the bus loop, right there. So all of that, so it looks like our property line goes through the middle of the white. Is our current fencing on our property, or is it still on the community center property? What is the white for? It looks like there's a big section of white there.
Yeah, so that is to come, and it comes in and accesses at the end of it. There's electrical transformer and stuff.
Yeah, where the extra white is part of the community center parking. Your fence falls right to the east of that white. So the extra little piece of white is just parking that the community centers allowed you, Arboga, to use for overflow parking.
Yeah, this is community center property, and then there is some electrical equipment at that location.
Right, and we also want to point out that you'll see right along in here as well. Right here, you'll see this line here. There's also a real property as well. So currently we're utilizing these two people's properties, and we've asked them to approach on their land for parking and traffic and everything else. So I just want to point that out, that the current way that we're standing, our property lines are actually over on these individuals. So we're utilizing these in their state.
So Travis, on the east side there, then our property line goes into Mr. Williams' property?
You're speaking right here, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a vote of contention with the homeowner. There's a back and forth fashion study, the situation study, they come out, and the homeowner's son has come out, had a vote of contention with parking on his property, and so it's been an actual ongoing.
When you say this encroachment, are people our staff or our personnel parking illegally?
We have not our staff or a lot of parents, because what they've done at this point over here is they're fence back.
So on that slide, I also have another question. Number 11, over on the west side.
Yes.
It says it's an irrigation trench. Is the, and this is the existing, so.
Yeah.
It seems to me I see our fence going right up to the ditch that we have over there. What is the irrigation trench? Is that something, I don't ever see that on our property.
Yeah, that's because the fence comes up to it, but your property actually extends into this.
Are you saying we own that ditch?
Yes, from what we've been able to determine. There's nothing really you can do with it. There's probably an easement that exists for this somewhere, but, you know, it's not space that you can really use.
It certainly looks like the canal to me, if I'm looking at that drawing.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the west side of Arboga Road there. And it seems like if we extended Arboga Road straight, it wouldn't run right into the current ditch, because the ditch would be on the west side more.
Yeah, it's...
Geez, yeah, how's that work?
That piece of property right there coming off of Arboga Road is owned by a citizen. So that's...
This one?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's two lots there, right? One was three. One vacant there, the little whatever shape that is. Then the house, and then the community center.
Yes.
Yeah, community center.
Do we know who owns that little spot there where the pointer is?
No.
I think that would be valuable to find out. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we could research that. So here are some photographs of the site, so you can see the parking in front. And some of the parking right now is on some gravel area in an effort to gain more parking than what's currently paved. The hard court area, classrooms with the hard court. This is a restroom relocatable that is at the one end of the run of buildings to the east, the northeast. The original building, the existing kindergarten resource program rooms here. Then there's that relocatable off to the west. The existing multipurpose kitchen area. And then this is kind of in the back area, play structure, and more of the hard courts kind of in the center of the campus. So then we started, after doing some of the initial site investigation and analysis of what is out there, having met on site a couple of times with the principal to, you know, hear what some of the concerns are that they have at the site, you know, traffic being a major concern. We started with the development of the program and then the concept design. And this may be a little difficult to read on the screen, but the left side is basically the existing program for the school, or the spaces that currently exist of 22 classrooms, and then the which are all shown here, the office space, the existing multipurpose building, et cetera, for a total of about 25,000 square feet of space. Then we looked at this project for...
I'm sorry, Mr. Geary. Could we talk about that slide there a little bit more?
Yes.
The way I read that, it looks like the existing total number of students, the grand totals that you have down there, is 1,051. when I'm looking at the, well, let's, if we go up to that top block, it talks about kindergarten classroom. It says we have two of them. Number of students, it says 91. I don't think we have 45 kindergarten students per classroom.
Correct. So actually what this is it's not actually the number of students, it's the number of students allowed by code for an occupant load. So technically by code you can have that many students in that size of space, but we know that that's not what you have. So that's
right,
just
where our district has the 23-to-1 for grades K through 3, so it seems a little odd that we would be putting those large numbers if they're not actually something that we could utilize.
Correct. Yeah, this is just what the code allows for each of those spaces. So it's not actually the student count that we're using it for. We should probably create another column and show what the actual student count is for these spaces.
Do we have that, our current student count, high grade level?
Oh,
487? Okay. Ms. Lossing, what was it? What was the number you said?
476.
Thank you.
Ms. Lossing, real quick, can you just share by grade level what the enrollment is right now so people can write that down?
We have 64 kindergartners, 69 first, 77 second graders, 62 third, 69 fourth, 73 fifth, and 62 sixth graders.
Thank you.
How do you do that? Just press that.
So we have a similar column on phase one, which again is not the actual number of students, but it is the code allowed occupant load of students in spaces. So so we looked at this project knowing that, you know, first phase is to bring in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, set up the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades on the campus and create a space for them. We then will look at, after that, kind of a future build-out of the campus if we started to replace some of the existing portable classrooms and kind of what it would look like ultimately.
Mr. Gary, sorry again for a correction, but we currently have sixth grade on site.
Correct. So we were going to add 7th and 8th, but create a area for 6th, 7th, and 8th on the campus. So that's why they're kind of grouped together as kind of that intermediate middle school level that would get created in a space that we'll kind of show you here in a moment. So the program showing the addition of those classrooms to create now dedicated area for 6th, 7th, and 8th, and then recouping the 6th grades for other uses and other grades on the site, and then bringing in a new multi-purpose building, and then some, you know, court areas that needed to be brought into this, as well as a track and a new kindergarten play area as part of this. So that just kind of set the program for the spaces that we were looking to add to make this a true K-8 campus.
So, sorry, again, one other question on that, because you had brought up track.
Yes.
And the track says it's a 3-lane track. So when I'm thinking of a track, normally there may be 10 lanes wide, and I think each lane are maybe 24 inches wide or something. Are we assuming that this track is only 6 feet wide?
No.
So what is a 3-lane track?
Do you have a dimension? Well, it would be only a 3-lane track if you're talking about 24 inches wide, and it's just due to the size limitations of the site itself.
We do have a soccer field going in the middle of it, a smaller version of one, so it gives the kids a play area as well.
So again, I kind of so you're telling me we're only going to have a track that's 6 feet wide?
Yeah, I mean you could make it wider, but that would mean increasing the size of the soccer
court. Yeah,
you can expand the outside of the track.
Yeah, we can when we take a look at the site, we can kind of talk about the track and what we're showing and what we could potentially do with it.
Yeah, please do. Track and field is just as important at that age and soccer. Oh, it used to be at least.
Okay.
It makes no sense to have three lanes. I concur with Mr. Rasmus.
Okay, we'll take a look at that here
in
a second when we get to the site plan on this, and then we can talk further about the track. So in this first phase, we now are showing 30 classrooms. As we move to the future development, we're creating some new spaces for admin, bringing in new classrooms, going up to 33 classrooms long term. So as we started in after we had kind of developed a basic working program, we wanted to start on developing design concepts. So we had a meeting again at the site to finalize what we had developed from the program, getting ideas on what was important again to the site. And then we went back and had essentially a two-day period at our office where we did a charretting, what we call a charrette process. And that's where we do, as a group, we're doing design drawings and sketches, looking at what the possibilities are for development of this site. So in the book, we've presented, kind of a look at some of the concepts. Some of these are what, we grabbed onto. To move forward. There's a couple there. Then there were, four here that got a little fancier with some of the colors. You can see where they had tracks and fields on them, where some of the buildings were, being done. Like on this one, there's a series of buildings that would run in that direction in the future. Multi-purpose spaces up in here. So we looked at a lot of options. We had a lot of different people looking at it to get some ideas and get the creativity going across these couple of days. And then we started looking at, what things, make sense? What things can we put together moving forward? So from there, we started to develop what we call the initial site plan layouts that we then came back to the site and the district and sat down and met and reviewed a number of concepts that were developed. And in these concepts, we showed an initial phase one, which was to get to the TK8 level, and then a future build out in which the portables essentially would get replaced and a new site layout would be developed. So this one, the first one we did, you can see, a track. You can see soccer inside it. Some new classrooms here for the 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. A new multi-purpose building. The existing building with some repurposing. And then a big part of this and the charrette process was looking at traffic flow. As a matter of fact, we had one person who spent the bulk of their time looking at different ways to deal with the traffic, recognizing, essentially a short dead-end street, was in need of a lot of improvements off the sides of the roads. So how do we bring most of that traffic and parking onto the site for safety reasons? So we looked at a number of options. You can see this one where we kind of loop around with parking in the middle and then loop around, trying to create both a bus and a car drop-off on the site and within our site parameters that we have to work in so that we're getting off of using adjacent parcels. And then the future development of this just starts to show, how would we, deal with the rest of the buildings as we move forward. So kind of in that configuration, and then a new building up front that would replace the existing building was shown. So this is kind of the first option. So we presented that. We presented then a...
Mr. Gary?
Yeah.
In looking at, because everybody I've talked to about this project, first thing they mention is the traffic.
Yep.
And so based on what information, you know, absorbing, looks like this plan absorbs the traffic. And can you speak to any, like, what the number of cars that go, what kind of data you were able to collect that you were trying to satisfy with this design? You know, a number of vehicles that need to be parked or any of that that drove your thinking?
Give me the book. I can't read. So it looks like on this first option, we've got 71 spaces in the initial layout. 42 of those are new. So the increase is 42 parking stalls. And then in the future, it increases to 85 spaces.
So, Mr. Gary, what is our current staff parking needs that we have at the site? How many staff parking lot or parking sites do we need for staff?
We have
29. So that's on a daily basis. We need 29.
That's the total number of stalls we currently have paved and striped on site. But you have more than 29 staff.
So what would our staff needs be? Anybody help me?
It's 47. At least, yeah, I knew it was at least 40.
So we need 47 parking spots for our current staff.
So 55. Oh. And currently there's 20.
Cafeteria workers, everybody, okay. 50 then?
55
if you include the preschool. What is it? I thought we had that in here somewhere. I don't see it in here. Can't remember what the acre. It's a good size site, though.
Do we have a thought of how many visitors on a daily basis we have for parking needs?
About 10.
I don't know how many visitors in a day would...
At a time?
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe 10 is what you said, actually?
Yeah, less than 10.
So on a daily basis, currently we need 65 parking spaces. Before we add any new buildings or staff, right? That's our current need?
Yeah.
Okay.
My concern is, what do we do for the overflow when they have like a back-to-school or a program? Are we going to end up parking in that neighbor's yard that does not want us to be there?
And that's pretty common for most school sites, because if you have a back-to-school night and, you know, you've got all these parents who are coming and you've got, you know, 400 and 500 kids, that's a lot of cars. So there's no way to create a lot big enough for those types of functions. So I think, you know, sometimes the back-to-school night, right, they kind of stagger the grades and whatnot. But, you would likely park in, you know, probably over by the community center.
Right. We were talking about the use of possibly having an MOU with the community center, getting that legit to be able to utilize that space legitimately, and just getting everything, like I said, there's a lot of handshake deals in the past that happen, but for those type of events, sometimes an MOU will be implemented with that site, just so we're clear on what our use is. That means that if our cars are creating potholes in that parking lot, that we're responsible for filling those. Currently, it's kind of a handshake deal we have with the community center, that we know that people utilize that parking, and every once in a while we get a phone call saying that there's potholes and ruts, and the maintenance department will go out with road base, spread it out, compact it, and fix the parking lot. So, but moving forward with things, I think in this type of scenario, we'd have an MOU in place just to make sure everything's above board.
Travis, do we do we have any idea who owns a community center?
We did look into deeds. At one point, we thought that the district owned it. Then we kind of flipped over some paperwork and found out we didn't own it. We'd have to go through some more archives, records, but we did realize, because there has been talk in the rumors that we owned it, and that was the first thing we had to clear. So
yeah.
We don't know the name of who has the deed, but there is a point of contact, and I forgot the gentleman's name, that we deal with the community center. And so I think that would be kind of our first jump off, because there's been talks. You know, we go through this, obviously it's a workshop, so we kind of talk about different avenues we can go with this. I mean, there's talk of, hey, can we purchase a community center in the property, right? Then create an MOU that they can utilize our multi-purpose room, right, for their events, things like that. So, you know, those type of things we've looked at, but given budget constraints on this project, we tried to kind of keep it in the box, so to speak. But it is definitely something we could look at in the future just to find out, like you said, because I heard you say early on about purchasing the lot towards the irrigation ditch and things like that. I just think at this time, with budget constraints and what we're looking at, we didn't kind of go down that rabbit hole, so to speak. But I think it is pertinent to understand that we should know who those landowners are and maybe get their feedback on it.
So I just let you know, I talked to some of the community folks out there, and they seemed to think it was the Yuba Sutter Farm Bureau that owned the community center land. But I connected with them, and they guaranteed me that they do not own it. So that was a strike too, I guess.
Yeah, so and we'll keep diving into it again. Like, we were shocked to find when we start doing property and boundary lines. Like you said, when we found this, and like, oh, wow, we're really encroaching on different people's property. So we'll keep digging into that to find out, see if we can locate the deed or who.
Would the county assessor have that information for you?
We've contacted the county assessor's office on a couple properties, and you'd be surprised if you find out that their records aren't up to date either. We were out there at, what was the name? There was a school out there on Arboga that they were going to build, and they're actually were tracking back property owners and titles. They actually didn't lead up to even saying that we own the property, even though I have documentation stating that we purchased the property. So sometimes those records back to the county aren't up to date as well.
I'm learning something. They never have any problem getting my taxes to my house.
Right.
Interesting. Thank you.
I guess the one question I want to at least throw out there with this whole traffic issue is, have we worked with the county at all, with either the planning folks or the Department of Transportation? Because this is only going to get worse. You may be absorbing the parking, at least part of it, onto the campus, but all those cars typically move at the same time, or trying to. And so, you know, the idea is, if we work with the county, maybe they can be some assistance in trying to straighten it out.
Yeah, and I believe, you know, Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, so we've looked at this from different angles of bringing traffic in, but you're absolutely right. We could look at the county and talk to them about the growth, because we know out there's a lot of developments going in, right? When you go and walk that site, it's evident that even to add another lane to that road coming in, you'd literally be sitting on somebody's front door.
Yeah.
So you start looking at that problem and going to the county, it kind of puts us as the responsible party. That's why we're staying on our property and pulling it in. However, you know, as the team and I have discussed, if you go through and you purchase different parcels, now you're expanding, and the county can say, cool, now you guys are responsible for widening the road and put it back on us. So there are these different demographics that we're looking at. However, with the traffic, you know, dealing with the county, it's not off the table to talk with them. I just think we're going to come up to the same assessment as we have, as all going out there. The team is seeing that there's an irrigation ditch, and if you widen that road, you're literally sitting on the doorsteps of people's homes. So it's kind of the lesser of two evils for us as responsible school district to go ahead and pull that traffic off the road and try to do the best we can to mitigate with this parcel.
So as the plan is further developed and kind of at this level, where we've not quite made it beyond concept and into schematic design, would be a good time to actually go meet with the county and find out really what are the long-term plans for the roads in this neighborhood. I think it's really the bigger question is because I don't think, you know, we really don't want to, you know, start opening up a, you know, hey, we're doing all this and, you know, because we don't want the cost of improving the roads. But we want to know within their general plan and or development plans that may be on the table, is there anything that's proposed to happen with this road, with the other road that's coming in, so that we, you know, have a better idea if something may happen long term? I mean, is this road going to, you know, further develop out? Well, you know, but it is going to be a tough road for them, and we need to find that out because if at some point it is, they may need to take some property, you know, at the front side of the school site. So we will have that conversation when we've got kind of now some plans that we can sit in front of them and say, you know, hey, what's the general plan look like for roads in this neighborhood?
My other concern would be while we're factoring traffic, have we seen anything for an emergency exit, or have you all factored that in with this at all?
So all of the circulation is developed knowing that we do have to have emergency vehicles that have to come onto the site, have to get within reasonable, about 150-foot proximity for a hose at every single building. So that is all being taken into account so that we've got minimum 20-foot fire lane or, you know, emergency vehicle access. Sure.
Looking ahead here, I see that proposed budget's like $14-15 million. And I know Foothill School, which is on a lot that's like 20 acres, you know, we have 400 and some kids there, or a little less than 400 kids. And I'm just sitting here thinking about what, you know, we've got 10 acres, and we're looking at 800 kids, you know, K through 8 on 10 acres. And knowing what it was like at Foothill with just 350 kids, it's going to get pretty crowded. The other thing is, for $15 million, why are we deciding to build a middle school on an elementary lot? What's the advantage of doing that versus just purchasing another lot and building a middle school? Like when Alicia, what's the school just down there that we tore down? But finding another lot, and you know that when this gets started, there's going to be overruns. It's going to get up over $20 million anyway. So, you know, what is the advantage to doing this over having and, you know, just building another school?
Well, for one, cost. We've already got infrastructure in place on this site. And especially for the first phase, we have a majority of buildings that are already in place, but you've got all the underground, you've got electrical, all that stuff is already there. You already own the property. So to go and get like another site and develop a similar sized middle school, we would all of a sudden be starting to look at things like $40 million. So it is a major cost advantage to develop an existing site.
Bring to mind, I think, that we haven't touched on the fact that we've been talking about Yuba Gardens, right, and how full they are, their capacity, and they're busting at the seams, and they need to relieve pressure over there. So that was another reason why we're looking at this, and it's, you know, we're looking at 2022 of a possible completion and trying to alleviate that versus building an entirely new school. You know, time, money, and the current situation, you know, all these things are factored in to where we kind of narrowed it into Arboga being a good location.
So you're looking at having this done in 3 years as opposed to maybe 7 years on a whole new school on a different site?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part.
Okay, I'm looking at, okay, so you're saying that it would be done in 3 years. 2021 would be, or 2021, 22, that'd be 3 years from now. And that building a whole new school on another site would probably take, you know, planning and everything and building would probably take 7 years. Maybe
less.
And you're saying a whole new school, another site would be $40 million.
Easy.
And we need to talk about, and that's what we'll get into when we get into the budgeting side of things and we start talking about escalation, even to the point to where the first, you know, we first start pulling dirt out, put this out to bid, or however we decide to, you know, procure this project. We're also putting an account with escalation and things like that. So it's pretty crazy the cost these days to do things.
I would add to that too, Mr. Allison. So we actually started this process, I think, back in April of last year when it came to the board with a recommendation that maybe we move forward. And that's when we actually did the agenda item for PBK to do this study. And so I think your topics are probably more of a conversation that we certainly need to have with Mr. Cena and the board and all of the stakeholders that we have. But again, I think, you know, it was the board's decision to go ahead and hire these folks to come up with a plan for our BOGA school.
So we've got, we'll kind of go through, there's three other options, which you may have already kind of glanced at. A lot of the differences in the options tend to be with the traffic flow, because we recognize that is probably the biggest issue. So on this one, we've got on the initial phase 78 parking spaces that would be created. So this here that kind of comes in this backward L, or to me it looks like a golf club, but that's okay, is the bus drop-off. And then the cars would come through this parking lot and out. And again, part of, you know, when you're out there and their kids are being dropped off, because this is not a walking neighborhood, so they're going to be getting dropped off cars and buses, is to create that space on the property for buses to queue, for cars to queue to drop off, to try and keep them off of all the drop-offs along the street. So that this was a little different look, again, with the first phase, and then with the future phase, the buildings, you know, kind of similar in a radial look, and the future phase, a little different look to kind of eventually replacing the existing buildings up front. And the rest of this could be done in a whole one phase. It could be broken into a couple of phases, but we're just right now calling it future campus phase or development. The third option shows, again, a little bit of a different look. So the buses coming and looping around here, the cars coming in next to them, so we've got one driveway in this case, but it will be both buses and cars coming in, and the cars will peel off and go inside, and then the buses come around and meet up and come out with one exit. So trying to look at how many ingresses and egresses we have. I think the concern was the mix of the cars and the buses in this option, even though it limited us to just a one in and a one out. I think there was a little bit of a concern with that. Plus, we have to at some point address coming in here for parking for the preschool, which also in the future development needs additional parking, because they come in, parents park, walk the children in essentially, and we saw a lot of that happening with them parking on the street and having to walk all the way in into the back to the preschool. So at some point, adding the additional parking helps them as well.
So, Mr. Gary, and how would parents access that parking lot for preschool? Are they going directly against traffic that's coming out?
They would have to come through this loop and come back into this parking lot and then exit back through. So there would be a small section that would be two-way, but otherwise everyone's coming in one way and going out one way.
With all that moving traffic, doesn't that create some type of a safety issue? You have cars and buses, and you have little ones running around.
Right, and that was one of the issues and concerns we had with this option, but we wanted to explore minimizing the in-and-out points of the site and seeing how this would actually flow, but in talking to the site as well as Travis and the district, there was a concern about the mix. So that's why this is,
Mr. Gary, I noticed option 3 and option 4 say that they're preferred. Was the preferred meaning that they got together with district and site and these are the options, the two options out of the four that everybody agreed upon?
Yeah, which was trying to limit it. On 4, we actually have, which may make this even a better option, is we have divided the preschool into its own in and out so that we can do the school and in and out in 1 and then a driveway separate for the preschool, that being the difference between the third option and the fourth option. So when we mix the cars and the buses, but limit the access points, we are now not having cars crossing over each other, turning when buses are turning, and so everyone's coming in, everyone's going out, and so then it's just a matter of regulating when the buses come in and when, you know, the cars are there, so that we can kind of limit then the interaction between the two.
So I think Mr. Fleury, I think interrupted, you had a comment.
Well, I was wondering how many kids are being bused in now, and when it's built out, how many buses do you think are going to be going in there?
So currently, they have 3 buses, and we were planning them for 6 in the future.
Triple. Double.
So, I do have a question on actually either of these, option 3 and 4. It looks to me like our kindergarten and our transitional kindergarten classrooms are there in the portables. And it seemed like at another school site, we just spent a whole lot of money to make sure our kindergartens had water and bathrooms within their classroom. Are we anticipating adding bathrooms to those portables?
In phase 1, the kindergarten will stay where they are, and there's already bathrooms in. They're in that admin building.
But that's not what your diagram shows.
In phase 1.
Option 4, phase 1?
Yes. Yeah, so
right.
The bright green?
Right there, 3 kinders in the TK.
Okay. Well, there will be a portable restroom being brought in to the.
Well, there's one on the end already.
Right. And then when we turn it into a new classroom building in the second phase, then it'll have the restroom in the building itself instead of having a temporary portable.
Right, because we can designate that towards kinder once we probably implement phase 1. That end restroom you're speaking about at the end there could be a designated kinder restroom. But when we go to phase 2, when that happens, most likely those classrooms will have restrooms in them, just like Edgewater does, within those classrooms. But that won't happen until we're looking at phase 2.
So what we're saying is we're going to take the kindergartens out of the classrooms that have bathrooms in them now and put them in a portable that has no bathrooms.
No. Right now, currently, they don't have them.
We have 2 kindergarten classrooms that have bathrooms. At what?
They should be staying there. We're not relocating them.
Well, that's not what our diagram show.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a typo that needs to be adjusted.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's look at, actually. So here's the, so these were, we presented these concepts, okay, 4 different concepts. And then we got some preference on, 3 and 4. And so the next phase of this is we then took and further developed the concept in this plan that you see here. So here you'll see that that got addressed, the TK and the K stay in that existing building. We've got the K that's already over there now with a second one added. And then the new wings were put in for grades 6, 7, 8 with a science room. restrooms, and then the multipurpose building. And each of these options, we have an option A and a B. So we went from the four overall concepts, we picked, okay, we like the direction on these. So then next stage of development came to what we'll see here with these two options. So again, you're looking at the flow of traffic with the buses coming around here, parking basically around the multipurpose and in front of the new buildings, and then they would exit out. The cars coming in and looping and then dropping off here across the front. And then we have the cars that would come in here and go back to the preschool and park and exit.
So, Mr. Gary, you're saying that the drawings on page 21 and 23, those are accurate, not compared to what the other one showed?
Yeah, so this is the next phase of the development. So
I mean, from the ones we currently looked at when we said the buildings weren't in the right place.
Because it was further refined after we selected them. And so this is the current version based on what was the preferred options that we further developed.
When we started putting the numbers together on the previous four design concepts, it wasn't cost effective to move the kindergarten down into that bank at the time, so we had to leave them up in that first phase until we could move on to the second phase.
So you'll also see in this option A, the initial phase one development, that we're now showing a total of 101 parking spaces. So now that starts to get yet more people off the street when there are events like back to school night and the like at the school. Then the future development of this option. Okay. Frozen. Oh, there we go. We go to 116 parking spaces because it ends up being expanded by the preschool, which is important to provide the additional parking spaces close to that building so that they don't have to walk from the other parking lot. Adds a third building for the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then the other building, the portables in here move away, and then these new buildings get in their place. TK and kindergarten move into their own wing here. That will get a kinder play area adjacent to it. And then the existing building is replaced by kind of a new building that will have the admin and library type of space. And a defined campus entrance will be created, again, then looking at safety and security issues of trying to restrict everyone to come in here, not having a wide open class campus with appropriate fencing around it so you know where to go in, get to the office, and or come in if there's an event at the multipurpose that we could, you know, get to, again, without going through the entire campus. And sometimes you might have something go on during the day for the lower grades while the upper grades are still in class. And then that one, then we move into the second option, which is very similar. We actually have a few extra parking spaces in this one. The building is essentially a little different rotation of it and orientation of the multipurpose building in this plan. TK and K are still up here.
So, Mr. Gary, looking at our new science building that it says we're going to produce, and back in your numbers it says that building or that room can handle 72 students for one science classroom. It seems odd to me to have one. I assume that's going to be like a science laboratory.
It would be a science lab about
And do we would we normally use that for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade science projects, Ms. Vetti? So we're looking at 200 kids trying to get into one science lab on a...
That is just the capacity number, correct.
So, okay. Could you turn your mic on? Or?
You can't have more than 34 kids in a class according to our agreement with Bermuda anyway.
Well, just like when we're having 48 kids, it's telling us back here in a kindergarten classroom. I could imagine that.
Yeah. Right, and again.
Correct. Yeah, and that's the normal for a middle school. They would, you know, move one classroom into science, and then they would move back into their classroom, and another one would come in, and it would be used that way throughout the day.
Does anybody know, do we think that that process works fairly well at Yuba Gardens?
Having one science, I guess they have one science laboratory and they rotate? Maybe that's something we could check out.
Usually I've seen the second class waiting outside until the first class went in.
Say again?
Well, maybe I misunderstand what you're saying, but
it just seems to me if we have six classes trying to get into one building in a science lab, it seemed like it could be a scheduling conflict or a scheduling nightmare.
I think by the time that they're getting into the junior high, they're starting to do the periods where you go to the different classrooms like you would do in high school to prepare them for high school. So one period would be going to the science room. The bell would ring. They'd go off to English. Then they'd go to math. You know, they kind of do that once you get into the 6th, 7th, and 8th because it's preparing them to go into high school.
Thank you.
And then the future build-out, just a little different arrangement. Instead of the radial, it's a little more of a north and south orientation to take advantage of the sun angles over here and create some an interesting amphitheater outdoor space here, and then open the kinder up to their play area off to this side. Ultimately, this one's at 119 parking spaces with the third classroom here. And again, on all these options, you've got the middle school hard court on one side. You have the elementary hard court. In this case, it's shaped like this. And the one before, it's shaped a little bit differently. A lot of that is yet to be determined. It's still in a very early concept stage. And then here is the soccer and the narrow track. So, you know, this is a bit limited, obviously, in here once we get these buildings in. So we can go back and again look at what is the size of the soccer field. Do we have any room to widen up this track around it? Or, you know, I've seen different size and configurations of tracks, so we can just kind of go back and take a further look at this since you've kind of expressed a desire to make this wider. Again, early concept stage, just trying to get an idea of how things would lay out, where the moves would be, where the buildings would basically be placed. We are far from at a final point of design on this. So just to show some basic concepts, for instance, of the multi-purpose building design. So this one goes with the option A design. So off to the one side is the kitchen and all the kitchen components that go with it, the office, freezer, cooler, storage spaces, the actual prep area. And then kind of a servery type of line that would go through here. So there'd likely be some type of, you know, wall. They would come through here, all depending on how it ultimately is laid out. We've not really spent any time yet with food service to get their input on it. Basketball court, so it's tall enough now at this point. You've got junior high kids, so you've got to play basketball. Small set of bleachers on one side, and then we have a raised stage on the other side. So that, you know, we can set chairs up in here for the stage, have bleacher seating all the way in the back. We've got restrooms at one end that can be used both from inside and outside. And then just some storage and then just general circulation of the public coming in, kids coming in. They would mainly come in from the back, the public from this side. A ramp up to the stage and then some offstage storage. So that's one of the multipurpose room layouts. Again, just an initial concept. The second one on option B, where this side is basically up against the drop-off lane. We've got the bleachers. We've got access from 2 points, 3 points. We've got the kitchen with a servery that might do more of this kind of configuration, stage. And in both cases, we create a little outdoor amphitheater off the back of the stage so that the stage could be opened up for an indoor-outdoor type of flow and have an event going on outside. And then similarly, we've got restrooms and storage and the like, same spaces, just a little bit different configuration depending on the final site layout.
Mr. Gary, did we have a chance from staff to see if one or two A or B is preferred between these two diagrams?
They have looked at them, and I think they're, you know, seemed happy with either one. Obviously, next phase we would dive in a little closer, and because we're going to have to go one way or another. But at the moment, both seem to, you know, be able to work for that.
I was just thinking, see, could you go back to A, please?
Sure.
So one of the things I kind of like about this plan is the kids are kept outside to go through the serving line. But the part I don't like, it's going to get a little wet and chilly out there in the wintertime with all them kids standing out there waiting to go in to get their food. So seems interesting that we would have them stand out in the inclement weather to wait to get food.
We would have that as a cover. The roof would come over and extend. It wouldn't be left out in the elements. These, again, are just initial design concepts to see what way the school and the district want to go. And then as we move into schematic design, we sit closely with them and determine what their needs are and what works best for them.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excuse me. I'm assuming the amphitheater is outside, correct?
Yes.
Will the stage be, will that have a roof on it, or?
That's really not determined at the moment. I mean, that's something that can, that whole arrangement can be further discussed. I mean, part of it may be covered, part of it may not.
Yeah, and I think the best way, Mr. Crawford, is you've been out to Edgewater, correct?
Correct.
So this is a very similar MT multi-purpose room as they have at Edgewater. So if you remember, you go onto the stage. The stage itself is covered, and then they have a big roll-up doors, and it goes out to an area that would be almost like an amphitheater type of stuff.
Gotcha.
So it kind of gives you that conceptual idea. It's very similar. And as far as the finite details and things like that, as we get into the design and starting to really look at fine-tuning what decision we're going to make on design, we'll pull Amber in, Ashley, and then we'll really start diving into, you know, the operations, get Rocco, Greco in here. That's really the details. So right now we're really just kind of looking at the conceptual layout.
Okay.
But the details will definitely be covered with stakeholders.
Thank you.
Why wouldn't we have a bathroom on both designs?
Yes, there is on both designs restrooms. So we've got a restroom and a restroom, and then this way. And then we have restroom and restroom.
So Travis, at Edgewater, I was just thinking when they played basketball, is that storage room? What do we do with all the tables and chair and the eating tables? Is that storage room big enough to fit them all at Edgewater?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's cramped, but they manage with how they're doing. So I went out there next to Lori Guy, and she seems to not have any problems with it. I mean, if you ask any site, obviously they want more storage.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the flow and everything working, they don't seem to have any problems with it.
Great. Thank you.
And again, the final size of, you know, everything from the restroom and the number of fixtures that are going to be in it to how large the storage room ends up will all be refined through the next couple of levels of design that occur on the project to where we'll actually figure out how all of those will stack in there to make sure there's room for everything. So the last section is cost and schedule. So some of the cost numbers you've probably already kind of taken a little bit of a look at. But basically, the site and the building costs are looking at about $11 million, and then we add escalation between now and when the project is actually bid. So that adds another $434,000. We then provide what we call a design contingency because we are still so early in the process and not everything is known. So we add another 10% for that, which gets us to a total of about $12.3 million in what we call hard costs. That's actually the cost of the construction. Then the bottom set of rows and numbers are what we call soft costs. Everything from engineering, architecture, the inspector of record, the plan review, the testing and inspection, admin, legal types of fees, furniture and equipment that you'll need to put in because you have now additional classrooms and a gymnasium space, and then what we call a contingency on just the construction. So anytime we have a project in construction, you want to hold a contingency amount because unforeseen things will happen, especially if we're on an existing site. We'll get as good of as-built as we can, but you know there are going to be things that pop up. So in this case, we are recommending that you keep about a 5% contingency for that type of stuff. Or you may want to have some things from a design perspective that, you know, got to have, and so we add. So once you add all of these numbers up, we are just about at $15 million for this. And this is only for the phase one. The phase two is we have not put any cost numbers to that because we don't know when that would occur. We don't know if it would be all at once or in multiple phases.
And would that be the same $15 million for any one of those four designs that we pick?
I think they're all going to be pretty close to that number. There's going to be slight variations, but I think the $15 million is going to hold for all of those.
You know, I'd just like to ask also as well, the PA system, is that cost involved in all of this as well? And will it also go and extend out to all areas of the school to include bathrooms or the restrooms?
In the cost right now for the multipurpose gym, you know, we're including that there would be a PA system in that, which, you know, would probably have speakers to the outside as well. How it ties into the rest of the campus, I think that's not yet determined whether it is or it isn't. We'd have to, you know, dive in a lot closer as to what is out there, how easily that could be done. So we're running costs and, you know, these are based on, you know, what we're seeing in the industry right now for costs to build schools. And you can see we've got it broken up by the different types of spaces. A kitchen space is more expensive. A restroom space is more expensive due to the plumbing and the equipment and those types of things.
Mr. Gary, the current play yard that we have there and the play apparatuses and thing, it looks as though that's right about where the new multipurpose room would go. Are we looking at just taking out those play structures? Are we going to try to move them to a different site, or is there any thought even been of that?
If anything is in the way, the first thought is if it's good enough and current, we'll try to see about relocating it. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. If we relocate it, it likely would be on the campus itself as opposed to another site, because we probably are still going to need some type of play apparatus.
And Mr. Rasmussen, I think that's another thing. You kind of touch on a good subject, because that new play structure isn't that old out there, and I'm sure that's kind of what we're looking at. It was put in within the last 3 years. So another reason why you see during these presentations and option one, option two, is we really want to have the foresight moving forward. So when we do these types of projects, we have a vision of where we're going. That way we're not duplicating efforts. It's kind of like if we have to relocate a playground that we just put in 3 years ago versus trying to integrate it into this project. But it's definitely something that we're looking at moving forward when we're trying to design these type of projects, is giving kind of a vision in which direction we want to go. That way, the big thing is not duplicating efforts and putting something and we're pulling out in a year. And so we're really trying to approach this very methodically and systematically as we move through all these projects.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
So the last item was looking at a schedule. It's pretty detailed, as you can see, taking it from basically today all the way through the process, where we would go through, as I mentioned, the different design phases, schematic design, which then more takes the existing concept plan and really gets it to a point that, it's fairly locked in where we're going. Then the next phase is design development, where we get into a lot more of the details. That's where we start figuring out everything about food service equipment or what is going in each and every classroom, from outlets to, data ports, et cetera. And then that starts to get refined in that stage. And then we'll move into what we call the construction document phase. And the construction documents is actually the drawings, what we call the project manual specifications, the book that goes with it that will actually go out for the contractors to build the project off of. That first will go to DSA for review. We take somewhat of a guess at how long the DSA review process is going to take based on what we know today. By the time we get there, it could be longer, shorter. They have put some new processes in recently. They've gotten a little bit better. We will then review and approve and go back and get final approval from DSA. That being shown here around October of 2020. We then would go out to bid. This showing bid to happen then in early spring, February, so we have some float if DSA is slow, and then going out to final bid in March, and then award of the contract, and then starting into construction as we are now into late spring, and then going into summer with eventual completion of this phase around spring of 2022. So it's a fairly detailed look. This is what we develop with each one of our projects so that we know where we are with each step along the way. You can see there's a number of reviews that happen with the district. We call them page turns. You'll see from 50% schematic, 95% schematic, 50% design development. So we will continue to get the input from the site and from the district to make sure all these details and some of the questions that we've heard tonight are making sure they're getting integrated into the design. And then at any point along this process, we're happy to come back to the board, show presentation of, you know, where the drawings are, what the design looks like today, whether it's at the, and we could do it at the end of each phase, however you want to do it, we're happy to do that. That way you're informed and you're making sure as well that the things you're concerned about are getting integrated. So with that, that is really what the book looks like, and currently the concept design as we have developed it. So I don't know if there's any additional questions on that, because we've got a few other things we were going to, you know, go over from a finance perspective.
Well, I was just thinking, it seemed like when we did this or approved this process back in April, seems to me that our plan was to see about this being a feasibility study to see if it's feasible to move this project forward. Much kind of like what Mr. Allison was talking about earlier, is it really in our best interest to put $12 million here, or do we do $40 million over here? Neither, we really have money for that. But it also seems to me, I'm not sure, you know, next steps even with regards to this project. How many of the stakeholders of the community have we involved in this process? How many folks, how many of the parents, are they in favor of moving forward with this? Do they have some other insider questions that, I'm not sure what our district's plan for moving forward with that, but it seems to me, I thought I read in here, if we're wanting to meet the timeline of March 2022, we need to make a decision by December. And it seems like a pretty short time. Do we have some thoughts of what the board would like to see in our next direction or next steps? Or Mr. Cena, you have some thoughts on that? Or BBK? Travis? Ashley?
Well, I have some thoughts. The driving issues seem to be, you know, the portables that are at Arboga are going to need to be replaced very soon. The shelf life on them doesn't have much. I don't know how much, but it's. And then also the traffic congestion. In talking about this project to anybody, the first thing they share with emotion is about the congestion. Also the overcrowding, not only at Yuba Gardens, but also with the development that's occurring out in that area. And then, you know, the concern of students who are choosing to go to other areas south of Arboga to other districts, the number of inner districts that we're losing. And then, again, the future growth. So there's some issues, real issues, that addressing those issues, you know, in agreement or in competition or in you know, judgment with other pressing issues throughout the district, that's one area. And I think that it sounds like those were the ideas that contained or said, hey, how about this concept, and let's look at this. So first, looking at those issues and how well an idea like this will address those issues. And then the next part is, it seems like anything that we invest in should have, people should feel strongly about it and positive about it. And providing a presentation to the board and having board look at it, you certainly don't want to move too far ahead without the board's knowledge and understanding. But there is a need for a stakeholder set of meetings, or certainly meetings for people to look at the proposals and think in terms of which features, understanding that each one of those features nipping and tucking in different places are different costs and things. So it's what adds or what's competition of different ideas and priorities. So looking at this timeline, it seems like the end of January is where you're sharing that, hey, we would need to decide and move forward, you know, if we want to move forward with this, to be near this timeline. And so I think that is the toss-up question. The toss-up question is, are these issues worth, you know, serious that we want to address and address first? And then if so, and this is the general concept, what combination or what makeup of these elements in these various designs, you know, would be best moving forward?
So just to, and that's very well said, and to kind of add to that is, prior to when we started this, we had spent a fair amount of time looking at, you know, a number of school sites in the district and some of the needs and concerns. And as we, you know, looked at a number of those types of concepts and, you know, what needs to be done and where, it became pretty obvious based on the need to move some students from Yuba Gardens, growth in this area, loss of students to other districts, that plus the overall issues at this site with portables that are aging out, traffic and parking situations that, you know, really need some attention, that it became very apparent that really this was a site that could solve multiple problems if we proceeded along with creating this K-8 school at this site, knowing that obviously to start that would be a first phase, then we would eventually move into starting to replace the aging out portables and end up creating what would eventually be a brand new campus here, and that we could do it over time and as money became available.
Look, one thing, just throwing thoughts out, the concept of a K-8, it looks like that's, you know, in terms of, say, student behavior of students that are in the 7th and 8th grade, that there is, in a K-8 or TK-8 system, there's more of a family community. There's the students, you know, if they had started in transitional kindergarten and they've gone up, there are relationships, there's mores, they're understanding the rules. And then also, as a student gets older, they take care of young, there's a built-in sense of responsibility to take care. So from research, it sounds like that not necessarily an academic increase for students that attend a K-8 versus, say, a middle school, but in terms of behavior, it's pretty clear that it does improve because there's a sense of community. So just throwing that out there.
That's absolutely accurate. That's what the studies show. We are working with a number of districts, and we're seeing a very big trend toward creating K-8 or TK-8 schools for that very reason. So it is becoming, you know, that's what I guess back in the 50s or whatever, before my time, you know, there were schools and you went there from, you know, K through 8. And then we started breaking off, right? We created junior highs and we created middle schools. And now, like many things, they're finding that this sense of family and community in having all of them in a K-8 is becoming much more valuable now than having them divided. So.
And one other question, and I don't know, this may be a magic question. This concept of how many student, what it sounds like is, what these numbers reflect is how many student bodies can fit in that room. But translating, and I don't know if this is possible, but translating how many more 7th, 8th grade students could our district serve with this expansion? You know what I mean? And not bodies fitting in a room, but how many more students could we serve 7th, 8th grade?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And so what I think we'll do is we'll go back and we'll actually put those numbers of, you know, actual students and show what you have now, how many additionally this would serve, particularly, you know, in the 7th, 8th grade, because those would be the new ones onto this campus, and we can get that over to you. So next, you know, and if you ask, you know, I mean, next step, and we hear about discussions of, you know, involving community or whatever. I mean, the next phases would be launching into taking a concept and starting to develop that more. And we certainly think, you know, community input is very valuable. You get buy-in from the community as to what you're doing. You're spending their money, and I think it's important that they, you know, feel that you're going in the right direction doing it. We would be happy to meet as a large group at the school, do a presentation, ask questions, listen to them, see what thoughts they have. Of course, all these things always have to be tempered with how much money do we really have to spend, which is always the tricky part when you do the community meetings. But you do, I mean, I do think it's an excellent idea. We also like to get input from students, okay, because they're the ones eventually going to, you know, go from first grade through eighth grade at a site, and, you know, sometimes they say things that are like, okay, but I'll tell you what, you'll get those two or three comments that are like, I never thought of that because, you know, I'm not 10 or 12, but that's a great thought. And so we love to get those kind of comments as well.
Mr. Gary, just one more thought about traffic. Have we had somebody out there between 7:30 and 8:30 and hit a tally mark for every one of the cars that come in front of that school? Are we talking? I know we got 65 staff folks. I mean, are we having 300 cars come by the front of that school? Seems as though that'd be an important thing to know how many cars we're talking about if traffic's one of our big things.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interpolating based on the number of students that are coming on buses versus what's left, and then, you know, taking kind of an average of, you know, you might have 1.3 per car kind of thing, you know, kind of gets us to where we can see that there's, you know, upwards of, you know, maybe 200, a little less than, you know, 175 cars that might be there for drop-off. So based on that, you know, we're kind of trying to, you know, look at flow. And even starting from scratch on a site, getting the drop-offs and all that, you know, to work really good is only as good as the parents driving the car. You know, we can show a nice long drop-off, and when, you know, parent A decides to stop way back here, we lose all that drop-off lane in front of them. So a lot of it is going to have to be on the site to reteach everyone the way everything, you know, works, which we do a lot of, you know, based on experience and based on how many cars we think we're going and how quickly they have to queue through the site. That's kind of how we've developed, you know, these layouts.
And the team and I, we've been there in the morning during drop-off in the morning, not tallying cars, but just sitting back going, oh my gosh, this is a mess. So I wouldn't say we're tallying, we're more like dodging cars, playing fodder, but it's definitely an issue out there. But we have, as a team, gone out there and watched the flow.
Thank you.
And real quick. Hey, and anybody answer this that might know, of the $15 or $16 million this first phase will cost, is there any money that will be coming from the state to help fund it?
Boy, is that a question to segue to the next portion of this or not.
And I do have some information on the funding of the project. Do I go up to the...
That'd be nice. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lawson. Easier for us to look at you.
Go ahead first.
While they're waiting for the funding, my last question that I would like to ask is that, has anyone like done any type of a study on that residential building out there? I mean, I'm not sure, like, the number of homes that could be built that would bring students into that school area. That's a concern that I would have, because there's so much building that you can do. You know, you got kids that are already in the sixth grade. They're going to be graduating. These parents have just bought these homes. And where are the kids going to come from?
So actually, Ms. Scott, if I could maybe just, it seems to me, and I think we're still waiting on I don't know if it's a population study. I think about the same time we hired these folks, we approved an agenda item to get our new population maps and updates for our 1920 school year.
I'm not sure if any other board members can remember that. But it seemed like maybe that should be coming shortly to be able to see, you know, what those new numbers would look like, at least from the new construction going on out there.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Chris DeLong, and I'm with the firm Hancock, Park, and DeLong. Our firm specializes in helping school districts across the state in accessing the state school facilities program. Essentially, in simple terms, we're here to help you get some state dollars. And so my goal here today is to give you an idea of the current status of that funding, what we can expect in the future in terms of that funding, what the funding is intended to be used for, how do you access that funding, and then lastly, applying those concepts to the ARBOCA project and what that means for you in terms of state dollars. So the current status of the program, the last time we had a bond measure that passed was in November of 16 through Proposition 51. That proposition provided $7 billion for K-12 school facilities. Of that $7 billion, there's only $268 million left for the CTE program. And then outside of that proposition, through the general budget that's approved by the legislature, there's $300 million for the full-day kindergarten facilities program. And I'll go in a little bit of detail, not a deep dive, but I'll give you an idea of what those monies are intended to be used for. And just like with Gary, if you have any questions, please do interrupt. So as you may have heard, Assembly Bill 48 was passed and signed by the governor. It places a K-14 and UC bond on the March 2020 ballot. For your purposes, the K-12 funding is about $9 billion, most of which is going to the modernization program. It also increases the amount of money for new construction, as well as the CTE facilities program and a charter school facilities program. So the purpose of the state funds with the new construction program, it's intended to help for you to build brand new schools. It's also to help add additional classrooms on existing sites. So with the ARBOCA project, for example, it looks like you're planning on adding 8 classrooms. That program can be tapped to help fund those 8 classrooms. And I'll go into a little bit of more detail later in terms of what you can expect from the state. The modernization program is intended to enhance the environment of existing sites. So that would mean replacing or repairing existing systems like mechanical, plumbing, electrical, taking care of parking lots at existing sites, and it can also be used to replace in-kind facilities. So you could actually take those modernization dollars and say tear down a portable and replace it with a new portable or a modular or a permanent classroom. In addition, the state also has what they call a facility hardship program. If you have any health and or safety issues at a school site, you can ask the state for priority funding to address and mitigate those issues. So for examples would be if you had toxic mold in a classroom or a building, the state would help remediate that. If you had issues, say, with a structural glulam beam that was failing, the state would help pay for that. So anything that has an imminent health and or safety component to it. Depending on the cost to mitigate the issue, you could either get monies to repair the issue or mitigate it, or the state would actually replace it in the instances where the cost to mitigate exceed a certain threshold. The Career Technical Education Facilities Program is intended to help build brand new CTE facilities at comprehensive high schools, or you can reconfigure existing facilities at your comprehensive high schools to make CTE facilities. The Charter School Facilities Program is intended to help pay for or provide dollars for independent or even dependent charter schools to build brand new schools, add classrooms, or modernize existing facilities. And then lastly, the full-day kindergarten facilities grant program is intended to help districts that aren't operating full-day kindergarten programs as of July 1st of this year to convert to full-day programs. And you can accomplish that by either constructing new kindergarten classrooms or reconfiguring existing space. So even though there isn't any current bond authority out of Proposition 51, I can't emphasize enough that the next steps for the district is to get in line for the money. So if this is a project that you're going to pursue, even if the March bond does not pass, it's still important to get in line because the state is still accepting applications regardless. And the name of the game has always been get in line as soon as you can, and that the sooner you'll get the monies. Just to put it into perspective, as I mentioned, the new construction and modernization program are essentially exhausted. The state already has combined over $1 billion in applications for those two programs. So there's still a huge need out there. Everybody recognizes that they need to get in line, and that's something the district consider as well. I mentioned the facility hardship program. That program, even though they don't have existing bond authority, if you do have any imminent health and or safety issues, your application is actually given priority and processed before everybody else. So if you do have any kind of issue like that, let us know and we can definitely help you access those dollars. The CTE program, as I mentioned, had roughly $268 million. That application cycle is currently underway. So if you have any existing facilities that you want to convert or construct new, we can help you with that process as well. The state isn't accepting applications for the charter program. However, if that bond does pass in March, they will open up another funding cycle for that program. As I mentioned, the March 2020 bond, if that does pass, it changes some of the program requirements. Under the current rules, the state accepts applications and they process them in date order received. If this bond passes, it changes a little bit how they process and approve applications. They'll no longer do them on a month-to-month basis. It'll be based on a quarterly basis, as well as the type of project that they're faced with as well. So in order to access the state dollars, the first step is to determine your eligibility for the specific program that you're interested in. Our firm actually works informally with PBK Architects, and last year we looked at the district's modernization eligibility. That I'll go in a little bit detail later, but that is represented on that one separate colorful table that you have before you. That is your district's eligibility as of 2019. Modernization eligibility is site specific, so Arboga Elementary has its own eligibility, Edgewater has its own eligibility, and it has to stay within that site. The new construction program, we have not been tasked with looking at your new construction eligibility. So if you wanted to pursue state funding for the 8-classroom addition at Arboga, that is something that we can help you out with. In fact, the proposal for us to do the work is on your board agenda tonight for your consideration through PBK Architects. So once you've determined that eligibility, it's then up to, the architect to design the project. After you get the project approved by CDE and DSA, it's at that point that you can apply to the state for the funding. Our firm will help out with a portion of number three. We help with the CDE plan approval process. And then, of course, the architect works with DSA. So for Arboga, for example, it sounds like they're expecting, if the timeline holds true, that they will get out of DSA in October of next year. So it would be at that point that we could file for state funding for that phase one. So one thing to keep in mind, once you submit that application to the state, that doesn't immediately turn into cash to your coffers. The next step is the state has to review the application, and the time in which it takes the state to review the application varies widely. So on here I have 3 to 36 months, and that's just an average. And the reason it's so broad is because the state has a backlog. So the last time before the current proposition passed, so in 2006, was the last proposition that passed before the current Prop 51. There is a 10-year period between those two propositions. In between that time, there's 4 years where the state collected applications and did nothing with them. And so they're still processing those and reviewing them. They're almost caught up. They're about a year, year and a half behind. And that's why I mentioned that the time for them to actually review your application could vary. So, again, I mentioned also that there's currently a $1 billion backlog. So if it takes them time to review those as well, that could delay you actually getting your funding. The other reason there could be a delay in getting your funding is the funding of your project is predicated upon the state selling the actual general obligation bonds. So they do that typically and historically twice a year in the spring and fall. But under the old administration with Governor Brown, he wasn't a fan of the program, so he really limited what was sold. Governor Newsom, thankfully, is much more of a proponent. This year alone, he is selling $1.5 billion in bond dollars, and we would expect nothing less in future years as well. So once they apportion your project, as long as you are under contract for construction, you can then ask the state for the cash, and then you'll get it within about 4 weeks of that period. So I mentioned that we already looked at your eligibility for modernization last year, and we updated it for the current 2019 pupil grants. This is a representation of all of your modernization eligibility for all of your sites that do have eligibility, but not the ones that don't. So in total, if we were to look at it for the entire district, the district has about $24 million in eligibility for state modernization grants. That could be as high as $34 million. And the reason there's that range is it really depends on what kind of scope of work you're doing on a specific site. The more access compliance and fire life safety work you do at a project will result in typically more state dollars for your project. So Arboga Elementary, based on what I've seen today for your Phase 1 project, it appears there's 8 classrooms being added. That would mean that you could apply for new construction dollars. We don't know, as I mentioned, what your eligibility is, but in order to get those dollars, you have to demonstrate that you have eligibility. It used to be with the program that you had to demonstrate eligibility at the time that you applied, but because the state's list for funding is so long, they actually now require that districts demonstrate eligibility at the time they review the application. So, one, it's important that you probably get a sense of what your eligibility is now to even give you a guess whether or not you'll qualify, but just be advised that if it takes the state a year or two to pick up your application, we would have to relook at that. Putting that into dollars, 8 classrooms would equate to about $3 to $3.5 million at minimum. What that doesn't include is the cost to develop the site. So depending on the circumstances with the site and how much rough grading you need to do, if you have to bring any utilities to serve those new classrooms, electricity, water, plumbing, the state will provide additional dollars for that as well. A good rough guesstimate is you can add about 35% to that $3-$3.5 million figure to get a sense of what you would qualify for them from the state. In addition, we can possibly get some more money for the demolition of the multipurpose room and replacement with a larger multipurpose room, depending on the size of the existing multipurpose room, and that would be something that we could look at. If you did not qualify for new construction dollars for that multipurpose room, you do have the option of using your modernization eligibility, which is between $2.3 and $3.3 million. So that could be used towards replacement, as I mentioned. It could also be used towards fixing your ingress and egress issues, your parking issues, that kind of thing. So in total, we're looking at about $6 million roughly, plus the additional costs that I mentioned. That's what I have for you today. You have any questions? No questions. Okay.
Are there any comments or questions from board members? Thank you very much.
Sure.
I guess I would maybe one. Would it be possible for us to get a copy of your presentation?
Definitely.
Maybe you can email it to Mr. Cena, and then we could have it printed out. Or
sure.
Thank you. Ms. Lessing?
Thank you. Yeah, is it this? There we go. Just use the. Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I saw the design concept last Thursday, and of course, my first thought was, how are we funding this project if the board chooses to move forward with it? So I put together some information to share with you today, and based on the phase one cost estimate of approximately $15 million, we have $3.4 million in Fund 25 developer fees available, and we have $12.7 million in Fund 24, the bond Measure P remaining funds. So that brings us to the $16.1 million, take away the 15, and then we'd have a balance of a little over $1 million after that. And then depending on the state match amount that we could add to that, that would be what we would have for phase two. And I think it was important for me to understand that everything we were looking at today was the phase one portion of the project. But also it appears that while we don't have any cost estimates on phase two, the amount of the 1.1 plus the state dollars that we may be eligible for, we would still need to look for other funding options to finish phase two or to start phase two. So then just looking at some funding concerns, using the rest of the Measure P bond funds and then pretty much the rest of the existing developer fee funds, not counting additional developer fee funds that we would receive, but that would pretty much focus the facility funds of the district, not counting maintenance, deferred maintenance, and so forth, but the new and modernization funds toward this project. And then it made me think of, well, what are the overall needs of the district for facilities, which is, you know, a huge question. We did have a facility master plan prepared and approved by the board in June of 2016. But one of the new requirements for the new bond that Chris had talked about, the new state facility bond, one of the new requirements is to have a current facility master plan. And the fact that 2016, while it doesn't sound like that long ago, cost estimates included in that were before the really huge increase in escalation of costs due to our wildfires, and then also due to the fact that in 2016, the other state bond money of $9 billion created a lot of demand for construction in school facilities, and the industry has escalated costs because there really hasn't been enough supply to go around. So they've been able to charge more because of that. So a new updated comprehensive facility master plan would give us the eligibility for the state funding and then give us really more accurate costs and help us prioritize overall. So then I always like to look at what would our next steps be, and I know President Rasmussen had talked about that. So we would look toward the December board meeting to continue the discussions on the proposed design options. There were some questions that you had brought up that we could bring back answers to, and then determine if we need another, at least one stakeholder meeting or whatever that need might be. And then having looked at what the funding available is, choosing to commit those funds for the project, if that's what the board decides to do, and then determining the project delivery method. And I didn't want to necessarily go into a lot of detail about that here because we've looked at a lot today with the design options, but I could have it available for us at the December meeting to look at the different project delivery methods and what would probably be best for the district. We have a couple of options that have a guaranteed price maximum, the GPM, that are very attractive. So that pretty much eliminates change orders. And then in January, continue the discussion and possible project authorization to move forward, depending on the board's preference. And that's all I have. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Ms. Lossing? Thank you very
much. Make sure we get it on.
Correct?
Yes. The okay. Eligibility, we have a contract with PBK to prepare that information for us at the regular board meeting.
Thank you.
So thank you very much, Penny. Just sitting here thinking about, and maybe this is Travis, I don't know. Thinking about this construction, it's been a number of years ago that we had had new buildings built at many of our sites. It seems like many of those buildings that were constructed were kind of offset from the main campus. So I think one of my concerns is if we move forward in this project, a lot of this is built right in the heart of our Boga school. And it's going to be taking place during session of when the kids are there. We're going to be tearing out the front of the entire school, change the flagpole so we can make entrance and exits in there. How disruptive is that going to be for our educational process, and what do we do with the children while we're doing all this construction?
Well, when we start getting into design phase and we start looking at construction schedules and things like that, we start looking at how to mitigate those questions. So, if we're looking at disruption, right, like the front of the school, it's something we try to get scheduled. Obviously, being that it's the front of the school and the only access point to the school, we'd probably have to look at timing, obviously. So it all goes in line with once we agree upon a design, then we start looking at construction schedules. We start looking at the feasibility of when we should start staggering which parts of the construction are going to happen, kind of like we did with Edgewater. If you notice, we got the buildings in first, then it was kind of get it gated off. Then we started working on the front of the school, so we weren't in the middle of disrupting the students. So it's kind of similar. As we go through the design and we start looking at construction schedules, that's how we'll start deciding how to do it. And when you start looking at, phase two and things like that, typically, we have to move portables back during that construction time. They can still utilize the portable classrooms. We just move them to a different location on the site. But obviously, as construction goes on, we're just going to have to look at, at which point is the most disruptive times and kind of stagger it that way. But like you're all well aware, obviously it'll have some type of impact as construction starts, but it will be, myself and our stakeholders and our team's duty to keep kids safe and look at the best options on how to do that and how to stagger that construction.
Travis, I'd like to ask, has anyone done a survey or checked to see if there's going to be any road construction going on at that time if we started a phase one? Are we going to complicate matters with the highways, the roads, and the school?
I think what you're asking, I just want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly, is to make sure that during the time of construction that the county or somebody doesn't have plans to widen the road or do irrigation work or anything like that. That I don't have the answer to right now, but the team and I, we made note to go ahead and reach out to the county and just to make sure if there is any future plans of growth or widening the road or anything like that. That way we avoid duplicating efforts or tripping on, you know, the entities tripping over each other.
Any other thoughts or questions? Or I'd like to thank you, Travis, and I'd like to thank PBK and all of their associates for helping us through this project. And I guess we move forward and see where we go.
Absolutely. So, thank you.
Thank you.